And we're holding on Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, the eighth line by the two dots. We started discussing yesterday a braisa that talks about various cases where the concept of knas or pitui doesn't apply. So we said, so far, I mean, the whole parak is talking about the cases of onus or mafata, where a man rapes or seduces a girl, a naira, and we're going to see further on in the Gemara whether it applies to a katana as well. So normally you have, as we said, if he's mafata her, then he has a choice. He either marries her and writes out a full ksuba for her as if she was still a basula, or he pays the amount that it would have been the ksuba of a basula, 50 shkalim, the pasuk says, which equals 200 zulas, the ksuba of a basula. And in the case of an onus, he's required to marry her, again, of course, assuming that she agrees, he's required to marry her, even if otherwise he wouldn't have wanted to, and he has to pay a fine. So we were calling this in the Braisa knas and pitui, respectively. The Rashi explains that knas means the money for an anusa and pitui means the money for a mafuta. When you get down to it, in both cases, there's a knas. So Tosfos had pointed out that maybe there's a reason why we call what happened, what an onus is required to do. Maybe we call that more of a knas in the sense that he also has a knas that he has to marry her, even if he would have liked to not because she's ugly or what have you. Which by the way, gets into an interesting discussion among the poskim, given that nowadays we don't have dinei knosos. Nowadays we don't have a beis din smuchim. So if a man is ma'anis a woman, So to make them pay the money, we can't. Beis Din doesn't have the ability to do that because they don't have the ability to force him to pay a knas. But do they have the ability to force him to marry her? Do we say, according to that one possibility in Tosfos, maybe that's also considered a knas? And as usual, the rule is that the Batei Dinim nowadays don't have the right to enforce dinei knosos, or so maybe then therefore they can't really enforce the requirement for him to marry her, or maybe not. Maybe the Gemara does mean knas in the sense of the financial payment, and then separately than that, there's the mitzvah that he has to marry her, and if he does, then he's not allowed to divorce her. And maybe the Batei Dinim now, even nowadays, are empowered to enforce that. Anyway, so the Braisa had listed a number of cases where there's no knas and no pitu. So it said Arayas and Shlius, and we defined in the Gemara at the end yesterday, at the bottom of Lamed Hey Amud Beis and top of Lamed and top of our Amud, Lamed Vav Amud Aleph, we said a couple of possibilities. Usually Arayas would mean exactly that, women who are an erva to him, as we learned in Yevamos, and Shnius would be the ones who are an erva de Rabban. But that doesn't really work in the context of this Braisa. So we said there's two possibilities. It can mean that Arayas means the more stringent Arayas, the ones that are Chayav Nisus Beis Din, and Shnius would be the ones that are also Arayas, but only Kares. Or it could mean that Arayas means the ones that where there's either Kares or Nisus Beis Din, and Shnius would be the ones where there's only a chiyuv lav. At the beginning of the parak, the Gemara brought a couple of different opinions. In the case of an onus, where the Torah tells us that he has to marry, that we force him to marry the girl. Now, obviously, that's not going to happen if she's an erva to him because they can't get married. You had a machlokas over there, whether it would apply if she's also to him with some lesser level iser, would we still require him to marry her and override that iser, or would we say that not? So the two ways of understanding this braisa would reflect those two different opinions of Shimon HaTimni and Rav Shimon ben Manasseh. Anyway, so now continuing analyzing the braisa. The braisa had said, "Hamama enes ein la knas v'lo pitui." A girl who does miun against her husband, as we learned about in Yevamos, where she was married off as a katana by her mother or by her brothers, who don't have the ability on a daraisa level to marry her off. So therefore, at any point while she's still a katana, she has the ability to do miun, to say, "I refuse to be married to this guy anymore," and that dissolves the marriage without a get. So the braisa is saying ein la knas. There's no knas for her. Rashi says the reason is because after all she was married, so therefore the likelihood is that she's not a basula anymore. All these dinim of onus and mafata only apply if the girl is a basula, and here that's not the case. Tosfos had discussed various other possibilities. Tosfos had said that what it might mean is that the husband himself, if he himself had been ma'anis or mafater her before while they were married, before the miyun. Now, when you think about it, the miyun dissolves the marriage and makes it as though they were never married in the first place. So you would think maybe retroactively it means that he was ma'anis or mafater her. So nevertheless, the Braisa is saying that doesn't apply. So the Gemara says, let's analyze Hoktana ba'alma isla. Now, by definition, on the face of it, by definition, a ma'anis still has to be a ktana. Once she becomes a naira, she can't do miyun anymore on the face of it. So the implication seems to be that generally a ktana would have the dinim of knas and pituri. Generally, we would say that if a man was ma'anis or mafata her as a ktana, then the dinim that it says in the psukim would apply. And only in this case, because she was ma'anis, would we say that not, according to Rashi, because she's probably already had relations, and according to Tosfos, because we're talking about her own husband. So, mani. Now, who would that part of the braisa be like? Rabbanan. That would have to be according to the Rabbanan, the Amrik Tana Yesh the Knas, where they say, it was brought earlier in the Perek, it's going to be discussed again further on in the Perek, they say that the concept of Knas does apply to a Ktana, even though the Pasuk phrases it in both cases, in Parshas Mishpatim about Mafata and in Parshas Kisetze about Onus, it uses the expression Naira. Nevertheless, the Chachamim say in various places in our Perek that the Dinim actually do apply to a Ktana as well. So the Braisa would be saying, normally as a Ktana, then these Dinim would apply, but because she was Mema Enes, then they don't. Well, the problem with that is Ema Seifa Ilonis Ema Knas Vele Pitui. But look at the next part of the Braisa, which continues and says an Ilonis doesn't have the dinim of Knas and Pitui either. Now an Ilonis never goes through the stage of Naira. We think about it. What happens with an Ilonis? We learned about her in Yuvamas. She starts out as a ktana, like every other girl. She never develops shtei sairus, which is what was needed in order for her to become a naira. Eventually, we find she has simone ilonis, that she has the various physical characteristics that mark her as an ilonis, and then we say at that point she becomes an adult. At that point, she becomes a begetz. So also Rav Meir. Now, why would there not be knas or pitui when it comes to ilonis? That would necessarily have to be according to Rav Meir. Dama ein la knas, b'homikat nusa yotzel a beggar. He says that there's no knas in the case of a ktana, only a naira, and therefore, in the case of an ilonis, then there'd be no time for the knas to the rules of knas to be in effect, because there's never a time when she's a naira. She goes straight from being a ktana to being a begeris. Well, the problem with that is Reisha Rabbanan Basefer Rameir. You're telling me that one part of the Braisa is according to the Chachamim and the other part is according to Rameir? V'chitei makula Rameiri. So you're going to answer maybe not. Maybe the whole Braisa is like Rameir over Ma'enes Savalak Rabbi Yehuda. You're going to say that maybe as far as Ma'enes, he holds like Rabbi Yehuda. Now, when we learned about miyun in Yuvamas, we said just straight out that it means that a girl can only be Ma'ayin when she's a ketana. However, there is in fact an opinion of Rabbi Yehuda who says that she can be Mamayan even as a Naira. So maybe you could say Rabbi Meir agrees with Rabbi Yehuda on that. So therefore you would say then that the Mama'enes, the point would be, had she not done Miyun, then she'd be a Naira like any other Naira and the rules would apply. But because she was Mama'enes, then therefore not. And then on the other hand, with an Ilonis, because she never becomes a Naira in the first place, and according to the mayor, the rules don't apply to a Ktana, then therefore there's no Knas. Well, the problem with that is, Misavala, does Rabbi Meir in fact agree with Rabbi Yehuda on that point? V'hatanya, we learn in a Braisa, ad mosei abas ma'enes, until what age or what stage of maturity can a girl do miyun? Ad chetovi shtei sairus, So they were married as a ktana. She was married as a ktana. They were married for a couple of years or whatever. Now she develops shtei sairus. Now her husband has never had relations with her since then. Nevertheless, the fact that she developed
shtei sairus. Can you repeat that? Because we lost you for a minute.
Okay. We're saying again, we're talking about a girl who's in position to do miyun, namely that her kedushin did not exist on a daraisa level in the first place. So what we're saying is, if she was married as a ktana, she and her husband were living together normally, having relations, all that. Now, when she develops Shtei Sairus, now she wants to do Miyun. She wants to say, I want out of this marriage. So the Braisa is saying, Divrei Reb Meir, Admosei Abaksim Ma'enes, Achatobi Shtei Sairus, Divrei Reb Meir, Reb Meir says flat out, once she develops Shtei Sairus, even if ever since developing Shtei Sairus, she and her husband have not been having relations, so you could argue maybe her marriage has not come to exist on a Daraisa level yet. Nevertheless, Reb Meir says, once she has Shtei Sairus, it's too late to do Miyun. And Reb Yehuda, imagine Yerba Shachar al Alavan. Reb Yehuda says, there is still a window of opportunity for her to do Miyun. He says, until the black overwhelms the white. The black meaning the hair in that area of the body, in Oysamakim. The white meaning the skin underneath. In other words, Reb Yehuda would say, that there needs to be more of a growth of hair than just Shtei Sairus. Shtei Sairus would be two hairs that, and they can be fairly short. In halacha, there's two possible definitions of how long the hairs have to be considered a sign of maturity. One is that they're long enough where you can bend over the hair and the tip of it will touch the root. And the other, in other words, it's long enough to be flexible enough for that. And the other definition is that it's long enough to be cut with scissors. Whatever the case, Rabbi Yehuda says that at that point, she can still do Miyun until there's more black than white there. Rashi brings from the Gemara in Nida to be exact. What it means is he's not saying there needs to be more than Shtei Sairus, but it means that those Shtei Sairus themselves have to be long enough that when you look at them against the background of the skin, you see a lot of black. The point is, now, Rabbi Yehuda definitely agrees that the definition of Shtei Sairus, as far as her being a Naira, is where they're large enough to be cut with scissors or bent over to the tip, as the case may be. So therefore, it comes out Rabbi Yehuda is saying that even after she becomes a Naira, there's still a window of opportunity for her to do Miyun. So it comes out Rabbi Yehuda, in effect, is saying that there can be a Naira who does Miyun. Now, what we're saying, Rabbi Meir disagrees with that. So therefore, if Reb Meir clearly disagrees with that, he obviously can't be agreeing with it. So therefore, we're back to if our Braisa is saying that a Ma'enes cannot do that a Ma'enes is not subject to the rules of Knas, to the rules of Onus and the Fata, or rather the man who did it to her is not subject to those rules, whatever, then that can only be according to Reb Meir. If we say that in Ma'enes these rules don't apply to, implying that otherwise at a regular Ktana they would have, then that can't be appointed a mayor. But then if we say that an Ailonis has no Knas, on the face of it, the only one that could be appointed to is your mayor. So you're back to the question, who is this Braisa like? How can you have that the Braisa is giving us a list and part of the list is like one Tana and the other is like the other? So my answer is okay. So here's another answer. Elul of Yehuda. The answer is we can say that the list in the Braisa goes according to Rabbi Yehuda. So therefore, that explains the Mama'enes. Rabbi Yehuda would be saying that since there can be a case of a Naira who does Miyun, then Rabbi Yehuda is telling us, okay, because she did Miyun, then Knas doesn't apply, implying had she not done Miyun, she'd be like any other Naira B'sula, and the rules would apply. And we can say, Tana, Savala Kereb Meir. Aye, then why does he have to say that? According to him, wouldn't he hold like the other Chachamim against Reb Meir that the rules apply to Tana as well? No, in that particular detail, he holds like Reb Meir, that it doesn't apply to Tana because after all, the Pasuk does say Naira. So therefore, so if we learn like that, we would say, so Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, when it comes to Tana, there's no Knas. That explains why there's no knas in the case of an Ailonis. She never becomes a Naira. She goes straight from being a Ktana to being a Bregeris. Meanwhile, as far as Mama Enes, Rabbi Yehuda would be saying, there is a window of opportunity for there to be knas, namely after she's not a Ktana, after she's a Naira, but still during the window of time before Ad Sheyirba HaShachar, when she's able to do Miyun. Okay, so the question then becomes, Umi Savala, does Rabbi Yehuda in fact hold like the mayor in that regard, as far as the fact that a Ktana, there's no Knas? V'amar Rabbi Yehuda amar Rav Zu Divir Rabbi Meir. Later on in the Perek, we have a Mishnah that summarizes and says here's the thing. Now, we know there's these rules of knas, of onus and mafata. We know there's another rule that applies that applies at a certain stage of a girl's life, namely that her father is able to sell her as an omah ha'ivriya, as it talks about at the beginning of Parshas Mishpatim. So the Mishnah says that those two things are mutually exclusive. During the period of her life when her father could sell her as an omah ha'ivriya, during that time, the rules of knas don't apply. Once the rules of knas apply, namely that she's a naira, then her father can't sell her anymore. And the Gemara says over there that Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Zudivir Rav Meir. So Rav Yehuda says there in the name of Rav that is only according to Rav Meir. According to the Chachamim, they're not necessarily mutually exclusive, because since according to the Chachamim, knas can apply when she's a ktana, well then, okay, so during the time she's a ktana, both things apply. If someone is ma'anas or mafata her, then he pays the knas and all the rules apply. And during that time, also her father could sell her as an omah ha'ivriya. So we see Rav Yehuda, the Amora, is making a point of saying that Mishnah is only according to Rav Meir. Now, if you were to tell me that Rav Yehuda agrees with Rav Meir on that detail, then Rav Yehuda, the Amora, should be saying that Mishnah goes according to Rav Meir and according to Rav Yehuda. Doesn't that show that Rav Yehuda disagrees with Rav Meir about the matter of Ktana versus Naira? He holds, like the other Chachamim, that Knas applies in the case of both Ktana and Naira. And then you're back to the question, who would our Braisa be like, where on the one hand, a Ktana who's not Mama Enes has Knas, and on the other hand, an Ilonis does not? It doesn't seem to work according to any one of the opinions. And the answer is, you could say, Hai Tana, Sablok Rav Meir B'chada, or Polagalei B'chada. The answer is, you could say, the Tana of this Braisa agrees with Rav Meir about one detail and disagrees with him on the other. So he might agree with Rav Meir that Tana Knas doesn't apply, and that explains the Ilonis. He disagrees with him about Mion, so he would hold, that Tana would hold, likely the Tana of this Braisa would hold like Rav Yehuda, that Mion is possible for a short period of time after she becomes a Naira. So that explains why we're saying Mama Enes doesn't have a knas, implying, but otherwise, as a regular Naira, there would have been a knas. So we can make the Braisa work that way. An interesting point, actually, is that the Rambam, on the one hand, paskins that there's a knas for a katana, and on the other hand, he says there's no knas for an Ilonis. Which brings the Raivad to ask on him, based on what we're saying in the Gemara over here, how are you making that work? The Gemara doesn't seem to have said that. In fact, the Kesef Mishnah brings an answer from the Maharik that says that in fact the Rambam may have understood our Savla Kedameir B'chodo Polagale B'chodo differently. That he agrees with him about. He agrees with him about the matter of Ktana. He disagrees with him about the matter of Ilonis. And therefore we can well paskin like that Tana and say and be consistent and say therefore that it would apply to a Ktana, but that it doesn't apply to an Ilonis. Anyway, Gemara continues, Rafram Omer, my mama enes haru uyalamayan. Rafram gives a different answer. You know what? In the Braisa, when it says mama enes, doesn't mean a girl who actually did miun. It means a girl who could hypothetically do miun. In other words, she's still a girl. She's still a ktana. So therefore, she's capable of doing miun if that comes up. So then that would work according to the mayor. Says, well, listen, Ktana. In that case, then why use the word Ma'enis? Why not straight out use the word Ktana? And the Gemara says, you're right, Kasha. It would be a Kasha on Rafram. It's not a Tziyuvta. It's not a complete refutation of him, but it would be hard to understand, according to him, why the Braisa used the word Ma'enis when it could have just as well used the word Ktana. Tosfos wonders about why the Gemara is even leaving it as a kasha. On the face of it, we have we can learn from that exactly that point. The Braisa is saying that she could do miun only as long as she's a katana, only until she develops shtei sires. Anyway, that's how it is then. So uh, So that's how it is then. So Raftram's understanding would be difficult to understand, but nevertheless we could still make the braisa work that way anyway. Okay, going on in the Gemara, we said Ilonis Aimla like Knas for like Peter. We said that Knas and Peter don't apply to an Ilonis. So we just discussed this point that we said that would be appointed a mayor, whereas according to the Chachamim, there might well be Knas for her, because even though for a long period of time she's a Ktana, so what? According to them, a Ktana, there is a Knas. But the Gemara says a Ramini, I have a contradiction. Another Braisa says, a Chershasvah short of Ilonis, Yeshlan Knas. If the girl is a cherches, which we learned about in Yevamos, which is a deaf mute who is considered in halacha to have less than normal intelligence, or a shoita, where exactly that she has less than normal intelligence, she's a v'hailonis yesh lahen knas. Then knas does apply. And by the way, the Braisa says yesh lahen tainas psulim. Such girls also there can be a valid tainas psulim. Namely, we learned in the first parak of our Masechta that you can have the husband, her husband marries her, has relations with her the first time, and finds that she's not a basula, where then he can go to Beis Din and complain that she's not a basula, and then there are the various possibilities. He might claim, which we'll talk about in the next parak, that he has Edim, that she was Mizana during the Erusin, and if that checks out, then she's actually Chayiv Nisa. He might not have that. He might be saying that maybe he might be saying that it was before the Erusin, and therefore it was a Mekach Tos, where she would be counterclaiming and saying that it was after the Nisurin and it's your tough luck, or she might be counterclaiming and saying Mokas Eitz, etc. But the point is, and we learned in the first parak that there are certain cases where no Tainas Basulim is even possible because there's a strong Chazaka that she's already had relations or otherwise had her Basulim damaged or removed. So we're saying, our Braisa is saying you should know with these kinds of women that doesn't apply. There can be a valid Tainas Basulim. The husband has every right to expect that the Chershus or Shoiter or Ilonis is a Basula when he marries her, and if not, then he has a valid claim. So we see that the second Braisa is saying that an Ilonis does have Knas. So Gemara says, Vaham Mai Rumya. So what's the problem? Hora Meir, Hora Banan. Okay, so you have the opinion of a mayor who says that Ilonis doesn't have Knas because she never has a stage of Naira. And the other one would be according to the Chachamim, who say that doesn't matter because Knas applies during the time that she's a Ktana as well. Okay, so the Gemara says, Ka'orila Mai Ka'orila. Well, then you got to ask whoever brought this question to the Beis Medrash, what was he thinking? What was his point to bring it? Didn't he realize that there were different opinions of the mayor and the Chachamim? And the answer is, you're right. The reason he brought that braisa in the first place is Mishum de Islam Mirma Achriti Ilaveh. Is mainly because he wanted to point out a different contradiction between this braisa and another one. So in other words, what happens is, when you think about it, the braisas, not all the Amoroyim knew all the braisas. So therefore you would have one of the Chachamim in the Beis Medrash brings in a braisa that hadn't been known before, and he brings that up in order for it to be a topic of discussion. So now the Gemara had assumed that he brought it in order to point out the contradiction with the previous Braisa, and the answer is that's not a contradiction because there are different opinions. But we have a different problem between this Braisa and another one. Namely, another Braisa says, HaCherches VaShoita VaHabergeres, HaCherches and HaShoita, which are two of the three that we had in this last Braisa, VaHabergeres, and a woman who's already a Bergeres, she's more than 6 months after Shtei Cyrus, Umukas eats, or if she was injured by wood and her basulim were damaged, ein lahen tainas basulim. In those four cases, the braisa says there was no valid tainas basulim, meaning that so the husband can't expect when he married her that she was a basula, and therefore there's no valid claim. If he comes to Beis Din and says, "I didn't find you a basula," we'll tell him, "Tough luck. You should have known that that's how it is." On the other hand, Hasuma Vailonis Yeshlan Tainas Basulim. On the other hand, the Braisa continues, this last Braisa, a blind girl and an Ilonis, there is a valid Tainas Basulim. The husband has every right to expect that she's still a Basulim. And Sumchus says in the name of Reb Meir that a blind girl does not have tainas psulim. There can't be a tainas psulim against her for reasons that we're going to talk about on Omud Beis. Anyway, so now you have a problem. So you have one braisa saying that a chereshes and a shoita, there is tainas psulim, and another one saying that there's no valid tainas psulim. So what is it? So that was why when he brought in that braisa to the Beis Medrash, that's what he intended to ask for it. And the Gemara had assumed that he was using it to ask about the case of an Ilonis, and the Gemara had said that's not a problem because you have the opinions of Reb Meir versus the Chachamim. And the answer is Amar Rav Sheshes, Loi Kasha Horav Gamliel v'Horav Yeshua. The answer is these two braises can be attributed to Rav Gamliel versus Rav Yeshua respectively. Now, we learned in the first parak, we had these various cases of Tainas Basulim, where the husband says, I didn't find my wife a Basula, and she makes some kind of, and therefore he wants to say that I shouldn't have to pay the Ksuba at all, it was Mekach Tos, or that I should only have to pay the Ksuba of a non-Basula, namely 100 Zulas, not 200, and she's counterclaiming and saying that there's a valid reason why I'm not a Basula, which shouldn't impinge on my Ksuba. So we had a few different possibilities. One of them was, for example, where he claimed that you lost your Basulim before I ever did Kedushin with you, and therefore it was a Mekach Tos. And she's saying that no, it happened. There was an onus where somebody was ma'anis me after the Kedushin, and therefore at that point, Nistachta Sadehu, it's your tough luck. So we had that. We had a couple of other cases. Anyway, Rav Gamliel in each of those cases had said that we believe her claim. Well, so what happens over here? So now this girl is a chershes or a shoita. She doesn't have the intelligence to claim such a thing. So therefore, when we say aim latinus basulim means the husband does not have the ability to say, well, since you can't counterclaim against me, therefore I'm exempt from the ksuba, or therefore the ksuba gets downgraded to 100, because we can say, look, if she had been a girl of normal intelligence, she would have been able to make a counterclaim, like Rav Gamliel says there in the Mishnah. And therefore, even now, even though she doesn't have the mental ability to make such a claim, we Beistin can make that claim on her behalf. It's called Psach Picha Le'ilim. You have a pasuk that says, open up your mouth for the mute. And it means that sometimes when you have a person who otherwise has a valid claim, they're not able to articulate it, then Beistin is responsible for bringing it up on their behalf. So they have to be careful. I mean, you know, you do have in Pirkei Avos where it says, Altasat Mechokarucha Dayanim, the Dayanim are not allowed to make themselves like lawyers and be advocating on behalf of one against the other. But on the other hand, but so Beistin has to be careful with this kind of thing, but they do have the basic concept that they're responsible to bring up points that the Baal Din themselves is not capable of bringing up. Anyway, so according to Rav Gamliel, therefore that's what we mean that Eim Latinus Psulim would, when we say Eim Latinus Psulim, would mean it means the opposite of what we thought. Eim Latinus Psulim, we would think, well, in a way, not really the opposite. Eim Latinus Psulim means that if the husband makes a Tainus Psulim, we based and tell him, go get out of here, your Taina is not valid. Well, here Rav Gamliel is saying that. Since he's making a claim, and she would have the ability to claim differently were she not a chereshes or a shoita, then therefore Rav Gamliel says that we tell the husband, I'm sorry, but we can't accept your tainas basulim because we're going to argue on her behalf that there's a valid reason that she's not a basula that doesn't impinge on her ksura. V'hor Rav Yeshua. Whereas the other braisa would be a point to Rav Yeshua. What did Rav Yeshua say in those mishnayos in the first parak? He said each time, loy mipia anu chayin. We don't necessarily take her at her word. So therefore, so Rabbi Yeshua would say, even if she does claim that that it was an onus after the Erasin, or that I was Mukas Eitz or whatever, Rabbi Yeshua would say, I'm sorry. We tell her you need to have actual solid proof for that. So therefore, in our case also, Rabbi Yeshua would say, the husband has a valid Tainas Basulim. We would say, Beistin is going to say, but it might have been. Rabbi Yeshua would say, very nice. But even if she herself makes the claim, we have no particular reason to believe it. So the same way we have no particular reason to accept that it's a valid claim from Beistin either. So therefore, according to that, we would say that Yeshlan Tainas Basulim, his Tainas Basulim is valid, and we allow it to downgrade Huxuba, or even to say that it's a Mekach Tos. That's all according to Rashi. Tosfos gets into a discussion about all that, about would that in fact be the case? I mean, if it, you know, if fine, we say that Basedin has a responsibility to speak up on her behalf, but not necessarily to take away money from the husband on that basis. So Tosfos discusses. So Tosfos discusses about that. Maybe we are talking about that. Maybe we are talking about that there can be a Tainus Bori over here, as she would have made. Maybe they do have some kind of evidence. Maybe they do have some kind of evidence of it. Or Tosfos says maybe the idea is that a Chershus or a Shoita is more likely to have been injured. The Gemara is going to say on Amud Beis that that was why Sumchus says in the name of a mayor that a blind girl, there's no valid Tainus Basulim because she's more likely to fall and be injured. Well, Tosfos says, the Re says in Tosfos, maybe by the same token, a Chershus or a Shoita are more likely to fall and be injured, etc. Anyway, the point is that those braises are not contradictory because they represent different opinions. But the Gemara says, does that really work? Fine, we see that Rabbi Gamliel says we believe her where she herself makes the claim. But if she herself is not making the claim, how can we listen to a hypothetical claim that she would have made if she had been a bastas? And the answer is, like we said, ain't, yes, indeed. Since Rav Gamliel says that in principle we would believe her when she claims Misherastani Nasti or Mukas Eta Yisi or whatever, then this is an example of what the Pasuk is saying as a directive to Dayanim, open up your mouth for the mute, meaning since she doesn't have the ability, she lacking Das, doesn't have the ability to make such a claim, then Basedin is required to bring up that claim on her behalf. Which again, according to Rashi, to claim that maybe even Mishera Stani Nasti, and according to one possibility in Tosfos, to at least claim that maybe as a Chershus or a Shoita, she's much more likely to be Mukas Eitz, and you, the husband, should have realized that when you were Makadish her in the first place. So it's not Mekach Tos. Okay, in any case, so that reconciles the Braises with each other. Onward. We said that a begeres, there's no valid tainus besulim. So now we talked about in the first parak, we said when it comes to besulim, there's two aspects of besulim that a husband would expect to find when he first has relations with her, where we're saying one of them is missing in a begeres. And here you have, one is the blood that would come from the basulim being removed, and the other one is the tightness that he would feel when the basulim are still there. So here you have, so we had over there, and here we also have machlokas between machlokas rishonim between Rashi and Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hanano about which one is it that we would expect to be missing by a basula versus which one by begeres versus which one would we expect to find. Rashi and also the Rambam learns that there will always be damim, whether she's a naira, whether she's a ketana, a naira, or a begeres. But the other possibility that we said there, Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, where he says I didn't find it as tight as expected, that wouldn't be the case by a begeres, because by a begeres already she's older, the basulim are thinned out, the muscle tone is weaker, etc. And therefore, if he says Pesach Pasuach Matzasi, then we would ignore that. In the case of a basula, but in the case of a begeres, but if he says I didn't find dam, then that's a valid tainus basulim. And the Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel, who learns the other way around, that you will always expect to find it tight, but you don't expect to find damim in the case of a begeres. Anyway, the point is, so we're saying a begeres, there's no tainus basulim. So the Gemara says, "Va'omer well, rab begeres noisin alayla harishin." The fact is, when they first have relations, there's generally going to be blood. And now, is that blood damnida? No, of course not. It doesn't come from the uterus. It comes from the basulim. So nowadays, we treat it almost as if it was damnida with slight changes because we're not expert enough to know whether there might be damnida mixed in. But in principle, it's not like that. In principle, all that, so therefore, in principle, he could have relations with her as many times as he wants that night. And we're going to assume that it's dam basulim. So in the case of a naira, he has more than just one night because it takes several days for it to heal. In the case of a begeres, Rab is saying the entire first night, we attribute the blood to the basulim. Well, the point is we see that there is blood. So how can you tell me there's no tainus basulim? And the Gemara answers, that's exactly the distinction. You're right. If the husband makes a taina that there was no blood, then that is a claim that we would have to accept and based in, even if she's a begeres, because we would expect there to be blood. The case where we're saying that there's no tainas pesulim would be where he claims pesach pasuach. We're there. She being a begeres, it's natural that there is more of a pesach pasuach, that it's not quite as tight and difficult to enter as it would have been when she was a tana or a naira. That's a point, again, that's according to Rashi. That's according to Rashi and according to the Rambam. And Rashi also adds the point that we do say, as we looked in the first part, chazaka edam terech besudro mafsida, that we do have a chazaka, a person is not going to spend all that money and all that effort on a wedding suda and then ruin it casually. So therefore, if he makes a claim, we do have to take it seriously. But nevertheless, in the case of a begeres, only one of the two claims is possible. And again, Rashi learns, and he has the girsa, that the claim that's possible in the case of a begeres is tainas domim. And Tosfos springs from Rabbeinu Hanano, which said, and then the Rambam also brings that there were goyim earlier than him, who held this way as well, who said the other way around, that the valid taina that he could make is tainas pesach pasurach, but a taina of domim would not be, but a taina of domim would not be a valid taina, because by a begeres, there's not necessarily domim at all. Okay, so that's what the Braisa means when it says Begeres ein latinus ein latinus besulim. Next, the Braisa had continued Sumchus omer mishum Rameyor suma ein latinus besulim. That he said Sumchus said in the name of Rameyor, blind girl, there's no possible tainus besulim. Again, meaning if the husband says I didn't find her a besula, then Beistin tells him, well, I'm sorry, you should have expected that. Well, my time at the Sumchus. Why does Sumchus say that? Omer Abzeinu neshinich betas agabe kaiuta. So Reb Zeta says she's just banged on the ground because she's blind. She can't see where she's going. She's more likely to fall and injure herself. Therefore, there's a higher likelihood that she lost her besulim. Mar says, so what? Kulanami chabuti mechbuti. So what? Lots of girls fall down. We don't necessarily say that because of that, he has the later on when they get married, there's no tainus besulim. And the answer is, no, the difference is kulu roya sumaris le'iman. The difference is girls were able to see, they see that there was blood that came out, and therefore, they'll show it to their mother, and their mother will tell them, you know what, Shefala, you lost your basulim now, you're no longer a basula. And therefore, when you get married, make sure to inform your husband of that. In the case of a blind girl, she won't see any blood, she won't know to inform her mother, Bechlal, and therefore, but the husband should still realize, given that she is blind, he should realize there's a high likelihood that she did fall and injure herself. And the fact she didn't tell him, so she doesn't know better, but nevertheless, he should have expected. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos learns somewhat differently, that it means regular girls, once they see that there's blood, they know that they know for a fact that now they're mukas eitz. So therefore, when he says, I didn't find you a basula, we would expect her to reply. The reason is because I'm a mukaseitz. And if she doesn't, then that shows that it's not the case. And therefore, we have to start seeing, are there any other reasons why she's not a basula? As opposed to with a blind girl, Sumchus is saying that it's a high likelihood that she's mukaseitz, even if she doesn't tell us, because how would she know? Okay. Then we said, another one in the Braisa we said is, if a woman leaves because of shame ra, then there's no knas or pitri. Now, usually, so shame ra means bad reports about her. But now in the next perek, we're going to learn about the concept of motzi shem ra as it applies between a husband and a wife, namely where the husband comes to Beis Din after they got married, after first relations, and says she's not a basula, and says, in fact, not only is she not a basula, but I have evidence that the reason is because after the kiddushin, she was mizana willingly with somebody, in which case I'm arguing that she's chayav misa. And we're going to learn in the next paragraph that if that checks out, then in fact she is chayav misa. And if not, if it turns out that the husband's edim will force edim, then instead he gets penalized with malchus and paying a fine and so forth. Anyway, so we're saying over here that if she has to leave her husband because of shame ra, then there's no knas or pitur. So let's consider, what does that mean? The Gemara says, "Ayotzes mishum shame ra baskilei." If in fact she has to leave her husband because of shame ra, meaning that the husband's accusation against her checks out, and she was in fact mizana willingly during the kiddushin, then forget about knas and pitur. She has to get skila. So why are we even talking about the question of whether there's knas? Which Tosfos says, in other words, the point of the question is, obviously, if it checked out, means she's obviously not a basula anymore. So, and the whole concept of knas applies only if she's a basula. So Omer of Sheshes, Hachi Kamar. It doesn't mean, so Rav Sheshes says, you're right. The Braisa doesn't mean yotza, that she had to leave, in other words, that her husband divorced her because of Shemra. Rather, what it means is yotza means they went out. Mishi yotza aleha Shemra b'yaldusa. It means that when she was younger, bad rumors were going around her, as the Gemara is going to say soon, that the rumors were that she is willingly Mazana. So then we're saying, Emla le knas le pitri. So then the concept of knas or pitri doesn't apply. So one reason would be, again, because she has a chazaka that very likely she's a ba'ula. If she has such rumors going around about her, as the Gemara is going to say, what kind of rumors we're talking about. Then it's a chazaka that she's no longer a basula. The Rambam, actually, it's actually today's Gimel Perakim of Rambam are these halachas of Naira Basula. And he says the reason is because the whole concept of knas and pitri, the whole concept of onus and nefata, is meant to be when it's a weary. If you have a normal girl and a normal boy where such things would never happen, and somehow his Yetzirah got the better of him, and in the case of Peter, her Yetzirah got the better of her, and they did it as a one-off, then that's when the Pasuk is saying these rules apply. Not where she willingly is going and being Mizana, even if we actually find her to be a Basula, nevertheless, the Torah never meant its halacha to apply to such a kind of person. So that's what the Braisa would be saying. So Omer Papa Shmamina. So the Papa says, by that we can derive from that a halacha in dinim mamonos. Hai shtarer ria loy magbinim. If we have a shtar that is suspect of being no good, in particular of being forged, then a person can't collect with it in Beis Din. Well, the Gemara says, "Hechi dami." What's exactly the scenario? We're talking about that there are rumors going around that this shtar was forged. Well, so here we're just talking about there are rumors without any solid evidence that this girl was Mazana. What do you mean? Rava says, we learned in Yevamos, that even if, actually it's not Yevamos, but whatever, Rava says that if there's rumors going about a woman, that she was Mazana, we're not concerned about rumors like that, and she'd be kosher even to marry a Kohen in the future. So rumors by themselves are not enough. Ella, no. What we mean is yotzala shem ra, and the parallel in the case of a shtar means it's not just rumors. De osu beitrei va'amri l'didhu tvatani b'isura. It means that two edim come to Beis Din and say about this girl that she actually tried to talk them into being mezana with her. De kava sahocha, and the parallel case would be in the case of a shtar. De osu beitrei va'amri l'didhu amalahu zayfu, where edim come to Beis Din. And they say, this man who's bringing the shtar to Beis Din had previously come to us and told us he wants us to forge a shtar on his behalf. So now we're not just talking rumors. Now we have actual edim. So that's when we'd be saying that knas and pitu don't apply. And that's when a papa would be saying that puts the validity of the shtar into enough question that we're not going to allow the guy to collect with it. So the Gemara says, how is that comparable, though? The Shlema Hossam Shchichi Purutzin. I understand where Edim come and say that she tried to talk them into being Mazana with her. The fact is, there do exist Purutzim out there. So even these Edim come to Beis Din and say, she tried to talk us into it. We didn't want to go along with it. But nevertheless, we have every reason to think that she found other people, who other men who were more willing. But if you're telling me about the shtar, how is that comparable? Okay, he wants a shtar forged on his behalf. The whole Jewish people have a cheskas kashrus. Who says that he was able to find anybody to forge it on his behalf? Once the two edim come and say to him, no, we're not going along with your schemes, he's not necessarily going to be finding other people who are willing to do. And it's one thing with znus, at least they get something out of it. What are they going to get out of forging a shtar for him? And the answer is Hochanami. Still, there is a comparison given to Kamahadra as a Yufa, since after all, we see already that there is evidence that he's looking to forge a star. Therefore, Ema Ziyufi Zayef Bakosov, there's a good chance that he himself just ended up forging it himself. He himself figured out how to copy other people's handwriting and other people's signatures and write the star himself. And therefore that's how it would be. So now you have, now the Rambam does bring in that connection, the Rambam says, if the Edim in Beis Din do say, actually we recognize these signatures on this shtar as being our own, then fine, he can collect with that shtar, because then obviously those signatures weren't forged. Different other Rishonim disagree with that, because they say, after all, you know what, once the guy figured out how to forge a shtar, maybe he figured out how to forge those signatures expertly enough that they wouldn't be able to know the difference. So in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber brings the Rambam's opinion, and the Rambam brings the other opinion that we can't necessarily accept the shtar even in that case. There's a further machlokas we're showing him on that. Would we say that this applies only to this one shtar where Edim came and told us about it, or would it apply to any shtaris that this guy brings to Beis Din after that, where we have a reason to suspect that he may have forged it? So there's discussion about those points in halacha. But anyway, as far as our case over here, as far as the Yotze Aler Shemra, then the point is, because we have Edim that say that she wanted to be Mezana, then therefore in the future, even if she does come to Beis Din saying somebody was Ma'anis or somebody was Mefatimi, then we would say that there's no Knas, because the likelihood is she's not a Basula anymore, or because, as the Rambam says, because the whole concept of Onus and Mefata is meant to be where it's a one-off, not where she's shown in the past that she clearly wants this kind of thing. The Mishnah says, "Ve'elu she'ein lahen knas." Now, the first Mishnah of our parak said that there are cases where there is knas, and we said even cases where she's she's an erva, where there's chiyuv kares, for example, a sister, even in cases where there's a chiyuv lav, for example, she's a mamzeres. So now, ve'elu she'ein lahen knas. The following girls, there's no knas. Number one, abo al giyores v'al shvoya v'al shifa shenifdu v'shenisgaru v'yishtachu yiseres abnez shalosh shonim yemechad, where the girl is a giyores or shvoya, a girl who was taken captive by goyim, and there's a chance that they raped her, or shifa, where they were freed from captivity or freed or nisgayer or freed from slavery, yiseres abnez shalosh shonim yemechad, at the age of over three. So the previous mission at the beginning of the parak said that if they were freed or if they were redeemed or freed or whatever, less than 3 years old, then we assume they're still basulas, because even if something had happened when they were below three, the basulim will grow back. But after 3 years old, they don't grow back. Therefore, there's a likelihood that these girls don't have basulim and no basula, then no rules of onus and mefata. On the other hand, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Shvuya Shnifte Sarei B'Kdushasa. Rabbi Yehuda says, no, a Shvuya who was freed from captivity still retains her Kdusha, even if she's an adult. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda is saying there's no, we don't have particular reason to think that she may have been raped by the goyim who took her captive. The likelihood is she's still a basula. Now, at the end of the previous parak, we talked about the dinim of shvuya. So on the face of it, we said that a shvuya is also to marry or to stay married to a kohen. For that reason, we had various other dinim about that. So on the surface, Rabbi Yehuda would be disagreeing with all of that. We'll see in the Gemara. Continues the Mishnah, Habo al bitoy, if the man is ma'anes or mefata his daughter, al bas bitoy, or his daughter's daughter, al bas benoy, or his son's daughter, al bas ishtoy, or his wife's daughter, meaning his stepdaughter, al bas beno al bas bitoy, or his wife's son's daughter, or his wife's daughter's daughter, all of whom are arayas min ha-Torah. In those cases, ein lahem knas. In those cases, there's no knas either. There's no dinim of onus and mefata. Mepneshim is chayev benafshe, because anyway, he's chayev misa. Because in all those cases, he's chayev sreipa. Shemisosin bidei beis din, because in all those cases, there's misas beis din involved. Unlike in the previous Mishnah, where we talk about his sister or his aunt or whatever, where there's no misas beis din, those are also alayas, but those are only chayev kores. And as we learned in the Gemara a couple of days ago, whenever a person is liable for misas beis din, then he doesn't pay money. That's commonly with the Rabbimine, Shinema, the Imba Yosin Onish Yonish, as we have the Pasuk that was quoted several times in this Perek, where the Pasuk says that if a man injures a pregnant woman and causes her to miscarry, then he has to pay for the value of the babies. But the Pasuk says, if there's no Osin, if there's no death, then Onish Yonish, implying if there is death, then he's not, because commonly with the Rabbimine, and we had the whole discussion of whether that applies only B'mezid or also B'shoigig, and so forth. And also earlier in the Perek, there was Rabbi Nachuni ben Akona's opinion, who says that it applies not only to Mrs. Bastian, but also to Kores. But the Chachamim, then we have the Chachamim who disagree with Rabbi Nachuni ben Akona, and the Mishnayos are going according to that. There is an interesting point, actually, that there is an interesting point that Rishonim bring up, that is there in the case of his own daughter. Now, later on in the Perek, we're going to say, now let's consider, when does the story of Onus and Mafata apply? When do these dinim apply? So we said when she's a Naira, and according to the Chachamim, also when she's a Ketana, not when she's a Begetz. Now, when she's a Ketana or a Naira, anyway, any unings that she makes go to her father anyway. So why do we even need to talk about that? Why do we even need to, Tosfos points out at the beginning of the parak, so why do we even need to be talking about the fact that her father is not paying, because Kamalei B'Dadabimine, who is he supposed to pay? What is he going to pay himself? So Tosfos brings up a couple of possibilities. One of them being that maybe if he died in between, then we're saying that nevertheless. Then we would have otherwise said that she gets to keep the money herself. And nevertheless, we're saying that. We're saying from that point of view, we would have made him or his estate pay. But now, but in fact, since there's kom lebedin avimine, then we don't. And Tosfos gives a couple of other, Tosfos here and Sanhedrin gives a couple of other answers as well. One of them being, and then the Rashba prefers this one, that we're talking about, let's say she was mu'uresis to somebody, then that somebody divorced her. So now she's not under the reshus of her father anymore. But now, so now if her father is ma'anis or mufata her at that point, then we're saying that the money would have gone to her, but nevertheless we're saying because come libid abimine that he's not paying at all. And the Rashba prefers that explanation over the other ones. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yehuda v'Rab Doisa Amru Davar Achad." When we say in our Mishnah that Rabbi Yehuda is saying that a shvuya has not lost her kedusha, meaning that we don't assume that the goyish captor raped her, we still assume her to be a psula. So he and Rabbi Doisa Amru Davar Achad are saying in effect the same thing. Rabbi Yehuda Hadamar, and Rabbi Yehuda's opinion we had in the Mishnah. Rabbi Doisa, where do we see Rabbi Doisa says such a thing? The Tanya. Shvuya echelas betruma divrei Rab Doisa. Rab Doisa says that a woman who was taken captive and she was a bas koyin, she can continue to eat truma. So we had in the previous parak, we had a discussion about a shvuya, that there's a high likelihood that she was raped, and therefore if she's a bas koyin, then she would lose her ability to eat truma because she had relations with somebody who's also to her. But Rab Doisa is saying that that's not so. She can continue to eat truma. And after all, the Omer Rab Doisa, v'chima osala ayri halaz. After all, Rab Doisa says, think about it. What did this Arab do to her? Tosfos says that we're mentioning Arabs because in particular, they're particularly shot of bezima. They're particularly addicted to znus. But even so, he says, after all, what would this Arab have done to her? What do you think? Just because he squeezed her between her breasts, then therefore that would be enough to pass her from korona? No, of course not. Only having relations would pass her. In other words, Rab Doisa is saying he may molest her, but he's not going to actually go and rape her outright. So therefore, we don't necessarily have a reason to think that she's a bola. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan is saying that Rabbi Yehuda of our Mishnah and Rabbi Doisa are saying the same thing about a shvuya. But Omer Rabba Dumaloihi, but Rabba says, on the side here, it says maybe it's supposed to be Rabba. Anyway, so he says Dumaloihi. That's not necessarily a valid comparison. You know why Rabbi Yehuda is saying over here that the shvuya is still assumed to be a basula, is not as far as other dinim, as far as eating truma or whatever. Strictly as far as this dinim, Onus and Mafata, we don't want the guy to get away with it. So here you have, she was taken captive. Now, later on, she's freed from that. Now, later on, somebody is Onus or Mafata her. He'd be likely to say, well, hey, she's a shvuya, so I get off scot-free. Rabbi Yehuda tells him, no, you don't get off scot-free. We're still going to assume for this purpose that she's a basula, and therefore make you have to pay the fine. Aval Hossam Kirabanan Svirle. But when it comes to other things, Truma and other situations, maybe you would agree with the Chachamim that in general we have to assume that she may well have been raped and lost her psulim. And similarly, Inami, or you could say the other way around, Ad Kan Lakamar of Doisa Hossam, El Truma de Rabbanan. You know why Rav Doisa is saying that we allow her to eat Truma? Is because Truma nowadays is only Dirabbanan anyway. The fact is, even if we did have solid evidence that the Goy had raped her, she'd still only be also to eat this Truma Midrabbanan, because the whole it being Truma exists only Dirabbanan. So therefore, when it's a suffix, then the Chachamim are not going to be machmir on her. But Knas, after all, involves taking money away from the guy, and it's something that applies on a Daraisa level. So Av Knas Daraisa, but Knas, which involves taking away money on a Daraisa level, maybe Kirabon and Svirale. Maybe Rav Doisa would agree with the Chachamim that a Shvuya Knas doesn't apply because of the suffix, because you can't take away money from a person based on suffix. So the Gemara says, "Omale Abayi b'taimed that Rabbi Yehuda hachash le'echot and yiskohu." So are you telling me that Rabbi Yehuda's only reason in our Mishnah would be because he doesn't want the guy, the onus of mafata, to get away with it? V'hatanya, what we learn in the Braisa, that Rabbi Yehuda's reason is not because of that. The Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a shvuya shenish besarei b'kushasa. A girl was taken captive, then she still retains her full kusha. Again, we don't assume that the goy necessarily raped her. And he goes on to say, even if she's 10 years old, meaning she's much older than the cutoff point at which her basulim would grow back, nevertheless, if she marries in the future, then her ksuba is 200, like any other basula. So we see Rabbi Yehuda is not saying it just on the grounds of choyt and nisker. He's saying, even when she gets married later on, which we're going to make her husband give her a full ksuba of 200, because we have every right to assume that she's a basula. So there's no choyt and nisker in that case. Doesn't that show that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying because of choyt and nisker, but rather because he truly holds that she's not that she was not nivol? And the answer is no, not necessarily. No, because you could say that if we don't say that she has a ksuba of 200, what's going to happen? People are going to assume, well, hey, if she doesn't have a ksuba of 200, means she probably had relations. In that case, I don't want to marry her at all. What if it was Berotzen, or even if it was Ba'onis, I want to marry a Basula. So therefore, people are going to avoid marrying her at all. So therefore, so maybe for that reason, it's a form of Chote Nisko. In other words, we say we don't want to damage her prospects for marriage, and therefore we're going to say let the ksuba remain at 200 on the assumption that there's a good chance that she wasn't nivol. But nevertheless, it wouldn't mean that Rabbi Yehuda would necessarily say that as far as truma, where none of those factors apply, that he would say that she could still continue to eat truma, even truma de rabbanon, not necessarily. He might say, as Rashi brings from a Mishnah in Adius, that Rabbi Yehuda would hold with the other Chachamim that say it depends. If the only way we know she was taken captive is by her say so, then we learned in the previous parak Apesha, also Apesha Hitir, that since the only way we know that she was taken captive is by her own word, then we can also take her word that she wasn't raped by them. But if we have independent evidence that she was taken captive, then not. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda might well hold that way. So not necessarily can we say that Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Doisa are both agreeing. It might be each of them are saying that she's Tahar, but for different reasons. And not only for different reasons, but also applying to different situations. Rabbi Doisa would allow it in the case of Truma because it's only Dirabbanan. Rabbi Yehuda would allow it in the case of Knas and in the case of her getting married, Shaloya Hichoyte Niska, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they agree with each other's rationales. Okay, we'll continue that discussion tomorrow, Beis Hashem.